Welcome to A World on Fire Season 2, and in an effort to cover Elseworld stories, I am here with my buddy Ross from Stop Let's Team Up. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, trying to stay out of the heat.
Yeah, a little bit of heat wave.
It feels like Kingdom Come outside.
It sure does, and you know, speaking of which, you know, you and I are going to continue the coverage on Kingdom Come here with issue number 2. The episode 1 for that is already out, where Sean and I covered issue number 1. We had a real good time with that, and I read this when the 20th anniversary hardcover edition came out. I bought it right away, read it right away, loved it, but I hadn't read it since. But man, going back through this, I'm really realizing how much I do love this story. It's really, really good. What's your experience with it?
Oh, I remember when it came out, I had the singles, and then I had a very nice, we were talking before we started, a very nice leather-bound version. If you guys ever can find this, it's a slipcase. It's a red volume and a thinner volume, and I think it's in a red slipcase too. But it's the best collected edition I ever owned, and I gave it to a buddy, and he said, "You're not getting it back." Because all I've got is a beat-up 1994th edition trade paperback, and it's so old that it was $14.95. And I'm like, well, this is a $25 trade now.
Oh, yeah.
But I loved it. I remember getting it as regular issues in 96 when it first came. Is it 96 when it first came out? Yeah, 96 when it first came out. And I loved it. I'm a huge Wade fan and one of the reasons I'm a big Alex Ross fan is I think it's from this and Marvels.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is just gorgeous. I love this. Yeah, it is. I forgot how good his interiors look, because he doesn't do interiors that often.
No, and you figure this was, you know, Sean and I talked about this as well, that this was very early on in his career too, and it's still mind-blowing.
Yeah. He did what? Marvels first, then this. Then he did Universe X, but he just designed it and did the covers.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I love all those Marvel X because it's kind of like a love letter to the 70s.
Yeah.
So I like it. And he did stuff for like Superpowers and Invade. He did mostly concept stuff. Have you ever read Astro City?
I have not, no.
That's a love letter to you'd like it, because you'll go, oh, that's this, oh, that's that. It's very an homage. And he does a lot of the character design and always does the covers.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've seen the covers. Really, they look great.
Oh, yeah. And Brent Anderson, who did Kazar in the 90s, mm-hmm. He's the interior artist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's a good artist.
Oh, God. I bought that Kazar Omni the second I had my, I found, I didn't know it was out, and I saw it on eBay, and I found a cheap copy, and it was like, that was one of my favorite comics for the years it was coming out. Awesome. I recommend it to everybody. I never got Kazar until that one. Especially when you find out that Savage Land was an amusement park. It's an ancient amusement park, and the people that built it are dead.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. I thought that was a genius. Someone got high and watched Westworld and stole the concept. It was, I forget who wrote it, but it was fun. But yeah, I love this stuff. I love the character designs. I love, you know, we'll talk about it as we go through, because there's a lot of, it triggers memories of good 90s comics. You know what I mean? When some of those 90 concepts, this is definitely a 1990s concept. Mm-hmm. How, when done right, are amazing. And then some people, there was a lot of copying of stuff like this.
Yeah. Oh, so, for sure.
So, yeah, but I loved it. So,
yeah, it's one of those ones where if anybody's, you know, has the attitude of, oh, everything in the 90s sucked, you'd be like, no, here, read this. And they need to sift through more stuff to find the really good stuff, because there was so much stuff. That's all I try to tell people.
And I'm trying, you know, I've learned by becoming an Omni junkie. I saw the New Warriors junk were coming out, and I watched Near Mint Condition, and Omar Coe, well, it's a great comic. And I didn't realize that was Fabian Nieste. I can always pronounce his name wrong. I feel terrible.
Oh, Nieste, yeah.
Yeah, and Mark Bagley. I went, so why didn't I read that as a kid? Why didn't I read that? Because I liked everything else they've done. And I got the first Omni, and I read it, and I went, this is so 90s, but this is really good.
Yeah, Bagley's a good artist, man. He's
yeah, and the stories were, I mean, they were just Marvel comics. I mean, they didn't reinvent the wheel. I mean, I read teen books, and that's my thing. And I'm like, okay, this is, okay. Fabian's a lot like Kurt Busiek, who's a lot like Claremont, who's a lot like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All very similar writers.
Mm-hmm.
So I just fell in love with it. So, and I'm discovering a lot more 90s stuff by listening to people like other podcasters who are younger than us go, hey, man, I really liked this as a kid. And I said, well, all right, let's give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not always give something to a shot? If you don't like it, you then you pass on the rest. You know what I mean? Or you get a book, you can sell it.
Yep. I've sold stuff. I went, ooh, I'm sorry. I spent money on that.
Oh, yeah. I think we've all been down that road. So, yeah, you and I are going to jump in eventually to Kingdom Come number 2. And this came out at cover date August 1996. Alex Ross cover, of course. And then it's script Mark Wade, pencils, everything, you know, wholesale art, Alex Ross, pencils, inks, colors, and letters by Todd Klein. But
ooh, first, okay, I was wondering that was that's cool.
Yep. Yep. But first, I want to definitely get your feelings about issue one. You know, issue one was a very interesting issue. It was, you know, 3 pages. It started off with this cryptic kind of hellfire and brimstone stuff that made you think, what's going on here? And then, you know, it wasn't long until we saw Wesley Dodds, you know, Sandman. He was in bed and you know, kind of in, you know, in the last moments of his life. And a minister was there talking to him, this Norman McKay, and he was telling this minister, hey, listen, man, I'm having these visions. It's the end of the world. There's going to be this. There's going to be that. And the guy was kind of like, yeah, sure, there is, pal. And then he leaves, but it's not long after that he's approached by the Spectre. And the Spectre and this minister are kind of like the, you know, the POV for a story that basically, you know, just in a nutshell is, It's many years later since, you know, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, those heroes kind of have moved into retirement, let's say, so to speak. And there are these younger, newer heroes, you know, air quotes, we'll call them, where mostly the villains of the day are all, you know, gone or dead or whatever. But these heroes just fight amongst themselves and kind of make a mockery of things. And eventually, Wonder Woman seeks out Superman to say, hey, Superman, you know, we need you, man. The world's getting crazy here. You know, we need you. And he speaks about a trial and some other things that went on that kind of, I wouldn't say forced him into retirement, but made the decision a little easier for him. But, you know, eventually we get to see, you know, all the other, the Flash. And we were talking about this as well in the first episode, you know, where's like, which Flash is this? Cause it sure looks like the Jay Garrick Flash, you know, but you never know, because it's, you know,
who is it? It's it. What is it? Is it Barry?
Yeah. You know, we were both talking about that. We're like, who do you think it is? Who do you think it is? Just simply because, you know, it's like, it's the Jay Garrick, you know, hat and everything. So it's like, is it him? You know, it's like,
hold on. I'm looking on their wiki page because I've got it open because I was looking for some trivia. It is Wally West.
Yep. So there you go. Right. So it's interesting. He's still blasting around.
Well, that's cool because he's my Flash. So.
Yeah. And then we see Green Lantern. He's kind of semi-retired up in this floating emerald space station looking thing over the Earth, just sitting there looking very morose. And, you know, eventually, when things start to really get crazy and get out of hand, Superman does show up to say, hey, I'm back and I'm going to set things straight, because Magog is kind of like the big kahuna with Superman out of the way. And he does something really stupid. It causes a huge nuclear explosion and kills people and basically takes the heartland of America, where, you know, most of the farming is done, and absolutely destroys it. So, you know, Superman's like, okay, enough is enough here. But that's kind of the cliffhanger we're left on is, you know, Superman coming back. So what did you think of the first issue overall?
Well, I remember reading it originally, and I thought it was, part of me as the big, you know, golden age, silver age, you know, modern age, kind of, I was like going, oh, this is a new version of that, like America Commandos in it. It was cool, but I really liked it because we're in an era, in the 80s, they did some reimagining as superheroes, but this is one is, what if it goes too far? You know, because it is kind of dodgy that you have people, vigilantes, flying around keeping law and order, and what if someone screwed something up? And I just, I've always loved it. One, it's a great story. I mean, Mark Waid is one of the great comic writers of all time. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever read anything of his I didn't absolutely love. Is Legion? I've come to like it, but you know, but this is just a good. They really understand the characters. I like the idea of him coming to bring it all back together with, you know, the sort of, you know, the children of his, you know, it's like the next generation of heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just think it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And it's so well written and so well put together. And just, you know, they nail all the beats. I just love it.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, why don't we jump into issue 2 here? And of course, there's an absolutely fantastic cover here.
The covers is, yeah.
Oh, a wraparound. I think they did those for all 4 issues of this. Yeah, they did. Mini. Oh, man. And this one's great.
You said the posters of them.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, this one on the front has, you know, Superman and Wonder Woman on the left and right. But it's got our buddy Norman McKay here in the middle. And he kind of almost has like a ghostly visage to him. You know, maybe he's been hanging out with the Spectre too long, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you know who he's drawn after?
Yeah, Sean told me, and I did not realize that until I read the intro here for it. I think Mark Waid's dad and somebody else.
No, no, it's not Waid's dad. It's Alex Ross's dad, isn't it?
Oh, I thought it was Waid's father.
Maybe. Oh, hold on. Maybe I got this wrong.
That's what it said in the beginning somewhere.
Okay. All right, that's cooler.
Yeah, there's a great intro with this hardcover I have by Elliot S. Magan.
Oh, too. I didn't read that this time. That's the intro in this one too.
Oh yeah, fantastic stuff. But yeah, great characters here in the back page, the back page, the back cover. You have Power Girl, you have Green Lantern, and Green Lantern looks pretty scary, man. He's got this suit of armor on and this green lance, and you see part of Hawkman there too, and it's a pretty intimidating looking cover, I would say, right?
Oh no, that's great. And I like all these new advanced designs. I like Donna Troy's a little bit. She's a plus size girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like the first. This is the first time we have a Red Arrow, which they've now done.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this version of the Red Tornado.
Oh yeah, yeah. They did some redesigns or, you know, just slightly new different things. And then there are some characters that were created, you know, wholesale for this. But like, yeah, you look at this cover, it's like you can see, you know, Our Man and all these other ones, like all the JSAers, basically a lot of the JSAers, which I really love.
Yeah, yeah.
But all right. Well, just on the Grand Comics database here, it just says a little synopsis that says Superman and other heroes begin to incarcerate the modern superheroes. Batman and Green Arrow join with Lex Luthor to form a third party. So that is something we didn't really get to see much of in the first the first issue. There was, you know, there was, you know, mention of Batman, and you saw now he kind of is an older guy where he's not out kicking butt. He has like robots and stuff like that doing crime patrols and watching out for crime in Gotham. And it's pretty much become pretty cool in Gotham. It's not like a slum anymore, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's really, really cool. But again, this issue starts out just like the last, except for there's just one page here. You know, you get this, it looks like the Statue of Liberty, the torch, and it looks like it's actually on fire. And there's, people flying through the fire here. And, it's again, really creepy, ominous look about it. And then I love how you turn the page, page 2 here, and it's a close-up on Norman's eye, and the reflection in his eye is what we just saw on that first page. Love what Ross did there.
I know. He's so cinematic. I mean, it's hyper-real. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. still a comic book.
Yeah.
You know, it still has that comic feel, but everybody looks so real. It doesn't look, you know, you don't need to, you understand, it's just so very specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, this is begging to be a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is. But, you know, it's, you know, he's thinking, and it says, he's thinking to himself, angels. No, I'm with the angel, aren't I? And you see the Spectre standing there, and, you know, up to this point in history, I think we know the Spectre is probably not an angel, unless he's gone rogue. You know, he's he kind of does his own thing. And
isn't he the spirit of vengeance?
Yeah, he did mention in the first issue, you know, basically doing X, Y, and Z for a higher power. But, you know, when you look at the Fleischer Aparo Spectre, which you and I have talked about, you know, I don't know if a higher power was telling him to do that stuff.
But I think that I think you're just not a very good self-starter. You make bad choices.
Yeah. Well, then Norman looks at the Spectre and says, "Where have you taken me? I no longer have any sense of time or place." And Spectre says, "Time has little meaning where we are, Norman McKay. We move freely from moment to moment, guided by your visions. I show you only that which we must see. You are disoriented," and he says, "enormously. I wasn't really asleep, and yet I wasn't dreaming." And he says, "Were you?" And that was something interesting, too. So when we saw in the first issue, you know, Wesley Dodds, you know, kind of, he was ranting a bit about having these visions and stuff like that.
And he passes them on to McKay.
Yeah, it was a little, you really couldn't figure that out at the beginning of the issue, but by the end of the issue, you thought, oh, wait a minute, you know, now he's getting the visions now that Wesley was getting, and, you know, that's what him and the Spectre kind of talk about here. Oh, wow, this first page here, again, we see that your buddy you mentioned earlier, this nutty America Mando, and he's going, like, full-on maniac here, trying to shoot, kill, drown a bunch of people on boats that are trying to migrate into New York here. He's going absolutely bananas, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's going crazy, and he's totally against anyone coming here. So it's like, okay, dude, if you got a beef, you could just, you know, talk to somebody about it. You're going a little too far here, I would say, you know, and it doesn't look like at first anybody's going to be able to stop him. And I love Norman here, you know, at the bottom of the next page. He just says, "These aren't heroes. They're madmen. They're ready to battle over territory without bothering to care who's caught between them. Someone should do something." And man, Alex Ross here on this next page, he outdid himself. What about
this? Yeah. Oh, I love this. I love this Superman. Because this is a very distinct Superman who, I mean, Johns brings him back in Justice Society. Mm-hmm. And I did like that. And he's just, it looks great. This is a great Justice League lineup. This is one I said, why can't this be the lineup in the regular book?
Yeah, this is an incredible image here, because the Spectre then says to Norman, "Indeed." And we see Superman front and center, to the bottom left, Green Lantern, to the bottom right, Flash and Power Girl. And then up over his left shoulder, we see Hawkman. And then over his right shoulder, we see Wonder Woman. And I'm not sure who that is in the back. Is that the Ray?
That's the Ray, yeah.
Okay, yeah. It was hard for me to tell here looking at that. But I'm like, oh, I think that's the Ray. And that's like, that's like, you know, not the original Ray, like a son or a grandson or something.
Yeah,
like
that. I think that's the kid that's actually in the 90s book.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah. But I like how they're using a lot of Golden Age characters. America Mando is a Golden Age character. Mm-hmm. He didn't look like that.
No.
No. And Red, White, and Blue were characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, really great stuff. And yeah, Superman, he's had it with this Nimrod. So he just goes right over and rips the armor right off of this guy. And I mean, Superman's back is to, you know, the reader, and it looks pretty, he's not ripping the guy in half. He's ripping the armor off of him, but it looks extremely painful. And, you know, almost like not something Superman or what you would think of Superman would normally do, but he's really had it here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then we get GL. He's, and this is Alan Scott, by the way. He's using his ring to make, like, almost like a giant shovel to pick up a lot of the immigrants out of the water. And then I love how they show the Flash here, too, zipping around like crazy. And then on that bottom panel, like the four or five faces in a row there. Oh, it's incredible.
No, I really like that. I like this version of the Flash that you don't really can. He's always moving fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's got Jay's old helmet.
Yeah. And they did make a point in the first issue to say, like, that he's always in motion. Like, literally, I don't know how he pulls this off, because how does he eat? But, like, he's literally just constantly going around, what is it, Central or Keystone City?
Yeah.
I think he's stopping crimes and stuff like that. And that's how they show him here as well. Because even in the awesome page before there, where it's like kind of like a movie poster, he's, you know, kind of in motion, as in like almost flying down with Superman and the others as well.
Yeah, it looks like he's waving his arms really fast to keep himself up.
Yeah, it looks great. It's a great image, but that was really cool. But I was a little thrown off by this next page here. We see these two guys who they're in kind of like almost like some kind of containment suit type things, but then their heads are sticking out. And one of them says, no, the Minutemen are distracted. We're losing our mental link. And the other one says, then concentrate. Command them to fire at anything that moves. Tell them. And at first I thought that might be Batman creeping up behind here.
Oh, yeah. That's Robin. And yep. I don't know who they are. I don't even remember seeing their names. But they were basically control. Everything's a little more complicated. Mm-hmm. In these books because there's a lot, they're giving you a lot of information, but they're also making you go on the new internet and go figure out who this is an homage to.
Well, you know what's interesting, those two guys, you know what they remind me of? That
they're called the Brain Trust.
Yeah, the 66 Star Trek show, that episode where it was before Shatner came on and it was the other captain.
Yes, the Talosians.
Yep, that's what those guys remind me of, those mentalists from that.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. But outside, you know, the JSAers, basically, I'll just, you know, say that. I'll just call them that. They're out here absolutely kicking the crap out of these guys and saving all these people from getting hurt. And at one point, even the arm gets broken off from an errant blast of the Statue of Liberty, and it almost crushes a bunch of people, and Superman just literally effortlessly reaches up, grabs it, and takes it back up. It's just fantastic stuff.
Like you're reading a 1960s DC comic.
Yeah, or even Golden Age.
You know, Superman would fly and carry something. You know what I mean? I could see any of those guys draw that action, you know. So I loved it. I liked that one.
Yeah, I love the panel layout on that page as well. It's all these, like, diagonal lines. And then there, you know, you can kind of hear the people in the crowd. It's really them. Seen you in years, hell, a lifetime. Where have you been all this time? Story of the century. And, you know, of course, everybody then, especially the paparazzi is there. And they're like, wait, we want to talk to you. Where are they going? And they go to the UN building downtown. And they walk right in there. And Superman basically says, like, you know, hey, we're tired of this crap. And I'm back. And we're all back. And we're going to clean things up. And it's going to be. There's a new sheriff in town, basically, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, on the surface, you're thinking to yourself, okay, sounds great, but we're going to see here, you know, things aren't always, sometimes things are really good in theory, but then when you actually test them out, maybe they don't go as well as planned, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
But I like Wonder Woman. I like Wonder Woman in this too, because she kind of stands up and you kind of get a peek at what she's going to be like later in this book.
Yeah, she's really pissed off. And she also is, I don't want to say she usually plays second fiddle to Superman, but I mean, if there was, like, you know, a pecking order in the JLA or JSA, most people would say Superman's the top, you know, person. Yeah. But you get the impression right away from her here that she's not going to let anything slide, that she's kind of the one pushing Superman. I don't want to say controlling him, but definitely pushing him.
She's pushing his buttons. She's nudging him. Very. Mm-hmm. She's giving him examples. We need you. Look how bad it is. Yeah, she definitely has an agenda.
Yeah, and it's funny. One of the reporters, after Superman says about, you know, I don't anticipate anyone acting without our sanction. Because he basically says, like, you know, if anybody wants to do something as far as, you know, a superhero, they need to tell us first and clear it with us first. And one guy says, anyone? Would that include Magog? Superman, are you truly prepared to confront Magog in light of what has gone on before? And Superman doesn't say anything. He just kind of turns to the side. And Wonder Woman immediately speaks up and says, Magog will be dealt with if he surfaces. Given the consequences of his actions in Kansas, that seems unlikely. And again, I mentioned that earlier, where he caused, I think they're attacking the parasite, and
they're attacking the parasite, and parasite's asking him, just leave me alone, I'm trying to get away. And the parasite touches Captain Atom.
Like, ripped his suit open.
Rips the suit open, and he explodes like a bomb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and basically, you know, like I said, they went there to basically say this to not only, you know, the world, but to specifically to the United Nations. And then somebody says, ladies and gentlemen of the delegation, is anyone here delighted with what we've just heard? And everybody has kind of a sour face on. And a guy says, no, why am I not surprised? And you're thinking, huh, why aren't they happy these guys are back and going to clean things up? You would think they'd be overjoyed to basically have a free police force to clean up any messes or problems. So you're just thinking to yourself, And then we see Norman and the Spectre are still in the room. And Norman says, there's a fear in the room. And the Spectre says, no, a validation of fear. Long have these mortals suspected that they are no longer the captains of humanity's destiny. Their suspicions have just been confirmed. So I guess that's what, you know, the point they're trying to make here is, you know, humans are still the overwhelming majority of people on Earth. So they still kind of want to be in charge and call the shots. And Superman just said, you're not calling the shots anymore.
No, the superheroes are in charge.
Mm-hmm. And then, oh, some more great interaction between, you know, Norman and the Spectre. And Norman kind of saying, like, you know, yeah, I see things and hear things, but it's a jumble of images, a cacophony of apocalyptic verse. It still makes so little sense. Superman said his league will grow. Who else will he call to his side? And the Spectre goes, we shall see. And, oh, this is fantastic. What about him going to see Bruce here? Why don't you speak on this?
I love it. I love this. One, I like how he doesn't walk down the stairs.
Kind of like flies.
He just floats down. Yeah. Why would he ever walk on the ground?
Mm-hmm. He says, Bruce, I know you're down here. You can't hide from me. And Bruce says, I bow to your superior wisdom. It's great. And then the next page we see old Bruce here, and he's got some kind of mechanical things to kind of help him out still get around. And he says, after all, you know all about hiding, don't you, Clark? And this is very funny because they're like, you know, world's finest. They're not world's finest anymore. They are very antagonistic towards each other.
Oh no, yeah, it's because it makes sense. It was like, I think Byrne, when he brought back Super, you know, when they reinvented DC after Crisis, I understood what he was saying. Why would a dude in black leather beats the crap out of you? They'd be friends with the Boy Scout.
Yep, it's true if you think about it.
Makes no sense. I was watching a documentary last night on Max about comics, DC Comics, and my buddy and me were watching it, and there was something about that, how before Denny, Batman was Adam West.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
This Batman is kind of like Denny and
Neil Adams. Yep.
Yeah. This is the dark. And why would that Superman be a friend? You know, it makes perfect sense that they're antagonistic.
Yeah, and it's fantastic that, you know, right away, Superman says, don't call me Clark. And he says, what happened to the manor? And I love this. You know, we're getting some backstory.
Just what we need.
Not everything. And he says, once my identity got exposed, Bane and Two-Face happen to it. Doesn't matter. I have everything I need down here. Besides, it's not as if anyone intrudes on me. That hardly ever happens, Clark. So he's really trying to piss him off after he said, don't call me Clark. And he goes, that's right. Someone told me your knights became free once genocide blew up Arkham Asylum and everyone in it. And he goes, not to mention Belreve Prison and Blackgate. Not an action I'd condone, but tell me the thought of it doesn't give your invulnerable skin a little tingle. So he's really going at Superman here, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I like that line where Superman goes, I don't have a dark side. Tell that to your tailor. Black is a new look for you.
Yeah, because that's something, you know, we didn't mention yet. Sean and I did where, you know, it's probably, like I said, you know, maybe more of an Earth 2 Superman costume, except it has black in the S symbol.
There's no yellow. The only yellow he has is there's no S on the back of his cape.
Mm-hmm.
He has it, and it's a more stylized S. It's more rigid,
mm-hmm.
less, you know, Earth 2's is a little more rounded than even Earth 1's. But mm-hmm. The only thing on him that is yellow is the buckle on his belt.
Yeah,
it's just red, black, and blue.
Mm-hmm. And of course, then he says, you know, hey, Bruce, the league needs you. And he goes, I'm busy. And he goes, too busy to help save the world. And he said, the crisis at hand isn't new, Clark. Where have you been? Oh, I'm sorry. Perhaps I should ask Magog. And Superman shoots him this really pissed off look. But then we switch to the computer screen here, and we see how Bruce's, you know, crazy Batman robots, for lack of a better term, are, you know, keeping things safe in Gotham City. And then he says, right now, the metahumans have the keys to Earth's kingdom. Wresting control is a delicate matter. It requires finesse and meticulous, careful planning against those enemies more hidden. But it can be done without, I might add, Superman and the Justice League booming into town, punching now, asking questions later. And Superman says, Dick doesn't see it that way. And he goes, you got him to reclaim the Robin mantle. Is that supposed to sway me? Try harder. He and I never did see completely eye to eye. I have my own controls in place, thank you. They may be slower and more methodical than yours, but they get the results. You used to brag that Metropolis was a utopia next to Gotham. Now who has the utopia? And it shows these great shots of Gotham where it looks like pretty much a utopia.
Yeah. But you see all these bat figures flying around in the sky. It's like, you know, people behaving themselves.
And yeah, it's
Batman,
funny
that Batman's just going, I'm just going to tell you all what to do. How's that? Be easier.
Mm. Yeah. And then Batman says to him, like, you know, hey, we're not limited to Gotham, Clark. We've built a network that extends from here all the way through Star City. I have allies, human allies, a little more in tune than your friends to humanity's needs. And he goes, we? And he goes, we don't want to rule the world, just want to straighten it out our way by ourselves. And he goes, then you're sure you won't join me? And he basically says, no, buzz off. And then we see the people that were in shadow here come walking out. What did you think of these characters?
Oh, I loved it. It took me a second to realize who the dude in the glasses was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big Green Arrow fan. He's kind of like one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
At some point in my life, Hawkeye and Green Arrow are my two favorite. And it was kind of like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
they look great.
But I loved it. I think it's great that they're old, Black Canary, you know. So who is the guy in the middle? Is it
Ted Kord?
It's Blue Beetle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Norman says the Spectre. Who? And the Spectre says Oliver Queen, Dinah Lance, Ted Kord, Urban Warriors. Mm-hmm. The street level guys. It makes sense that they team up with Batman, right?
Oh yeah, of course. And then you get to see all his other allies on the computer screen. Got Doc Fate, Wildcat, Jade, Obsidian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he does have his little network of people here that, you know, and again, more towards the street level, but, you know, like you said, some others as well. And, you know, he does say, he goes, we have our own team to call into play. And then it looks like Dinah says, you sound as if you have a plan. And he goes, and then Ted says, does Batman ever not have a plan? We've got contacts across the world. It's time we drew that web tight. And Norman then says on the next page, were they ever friends, Superman and Batman? The way they bicker, it's hard to tell. And the Spectre says, great minds don't always think alike. In their day, they were the truest representatives of their kind. One, the zenith of human fortitude and ambition. The other, the pinnacle of otherworldly power. And he goes, otherworldly? Oh, of course, Superman's an alien. And then we see an accident of birth. For most of his life, he walked among the humans as well as above them. He remained tethered to human concerns through the love of an earthly woman until her life was stolen. And then he says, and Wonder Woman? And we see her, and she's on a horse with a spear getting ready to basically put it through somebody's head. And Spectre says, like Superman, a paradox. Eternal princess of the Amazons, she is both an ambassador of peace and a master of warfare. Of all Superman's lieutenants, it is she who bears watching most closely. So they're kind of tipping their hand a little bit there.
Oh yeah. And then I like on this next panel is where you see a recruiting drive for the Justice League. You got Wonder Girl, or I guess Troy. You got Golden Guardian, the big tall gold guy with the onesie on, that's Cyborg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then a version, I like this version of Doc Midnight too, that he's made of dark clouds.
Yeah, that looks really super cool as he's standing there talking to GL and Hawkman. I like that.
I do too. And also this page has, this is the first time we see Tom Calor, the Star Boy, as Starman in this costume in a comic.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, that's great.
That's where John's got it from.
Cool.
Yeah. So God, I love that costume. It is such a good costume.
I think, is this supposed to be Starfire here as well? On
yes.
The left?
Yes. Yeah. That's Starfire.
I thought so. It looked kind of close to what, you know, her regular look and costume and everything were. But yeah, they, right away, they, you know, jump in and start, you know, taking out some of these, you know, maniac kind of, you know, like we said before, air quotes, heroes that are just out of control. And they pretty easily, you know, take these guys down. And I love there's a shot above when, you know, the Justice League is flying above all the little kids. One is a Superman shirt. One is a Flash shirt. It's great.
Oh, I want to go back in the big fight scene where Flash and all them. Did you catch the green girl with the cape below Superman?
Down in the bottom right there. Yeah, I'm not sure who that is.
I looked this up earlier because I saw her and I went, I don't remember her. That is Brainiac's daughter. That's her super name.
Like Harlequin's daughter. Brainiac 5, yeah.
Yeah, it's Brainiac 5 and Supergirl's daughter.
Traveled back
from the 30th century with Starman and joined the Justice League.
Yep, that's right. Yep, I did read that. That's great. But yeah, really.
That's a great cover. It got me a great costume. And that's just such a nice touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then...
fan of like Harlequin's daughter. It's the one thing in the Rosakis, Teen Titans that I like. I like the idea of a Harlequin, of Joker's daughter being a member of the Titans.
Yeah, and then we see, you know, Diana here, you know, Wonder Woman. She starts kicking the crap out of people here, and Superman's like, yo, take a breath. They're not evil. They're just misguided. And she goes, how badly? If they want to act like warriors, I'll show them war. And he goes, you're right. They seem to have learned little regard for human life. And there's an older woman there that's sitting there with her head smashed open that, you know, Superman's trying to help up. And he says, and there is nothing more sacred than that. And then we go to a different scene here. This was really interesting. And of course, it makes complete sense, but I totally forgot about this here. What did you think of this next scene here?
Oh, I love it. One, that's a great Vandal Savage moment. I said two sugars.
Yeah.
I can see him saying it just like that, just matter-of-factly. I said two sugars. And crack as he snaps her neck. And it's like the bad guy Illuminati.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Norman and the Spectre come walking into this boardroom, basically. And, you know, we see Lex Luthor here. Vandal Savage, Catwoman, and Riddler, which is kind of a little weird, but they are there. And then a couple other people too, right?
The King of Heart, was it the King from?
Yeah, from the Royal Flush Gang or whatever. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Catwoman and Ed, the Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a second to realize who the other guy in the sitting next to her that he was. I'm trying to find it now.
Yeah, is he a new character? No.
He is.
Or is he? Is that the guy?
Oh, he's Cobra. He's Cobra.
He's
the head of the you know what I mean? The DC villain Cobra.
Yep, he's that guy. And then there's that one younger guy who isn't that Bruce and what's her name's son? Bruce Wayne.
No, that's what I'm talking about. That's the guy sitting next to Catwoman. That's Cobra. Where is it? Wait a minute.
No, I think Cobra's the guy with the bald head.
Yeah,
and I think, if I'm not mistaken, that story it probably ended up being an Elseworlds story where Ra's al Ghul's daughter and Batman had a kid.
No, that's who Damian is.
Oh, I thought that's who they said this guy was.
Yeah, the current Ra's, yeah, there were this that couldn't be because he was created by Morrison, I thought. So, hold on, let me see that. I don't know, but this is a great scene. It's an incredibly good scene.
Yeah, they basically have their own little club here where they are plotting to, I don't want to say they're plotting to take over the world, but they're basically plotting to get the superheroes out of their way and back kind of, I don't know if I should say in check, but back to how things were before when the superheroes didn't just run amok and take over.
Oh, yeah.
Pronounce that guy's name. XUFFACHCSCH. I can't even pronounce that guy's name.
That is Batman and Talia's kid. Okay, you're right. I can't say that.
I'm not even Fosh.
my big middle-aged white guy, or old white guy tongue is not wrapping itself around that.
Yeah, that's
wild. My goodness.
But yeah, they're sitting here basically plotting on you know, how to, you know, take back, you know, power or some of the power, you know, that if they've lost now with these heroes just going bananas and, you know, killing if they feel like it, basically. But, you know, they're gonna do it one way or the other. And this, they see, you know, the Justice League forming and coming back as an opportunity with this little bit of a chaotic period in time to, you know, wrestle that control back and some of that power. And it just does stand to reason that with the JLA coming back, some of these, you know, air quotes heroes, and even some of the other older retired heroes, like we saw with Batman and his buddies there, that there are going to be people that are going to disagree with and therefore oppose Superman and Wonder Woman and the rest of the Justice League, right?
Yeah. Oh, it makes perfect sense. I like how they portray Luthor.
Mm-hmm. He's like the Kingpin.
He's like the. I think he's a mixture of Kingpin and Trump.
Yeah, he does.
That face when he's smoking the cigar and he's getting the shave.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Trump's face, really.
Because he does look kind of like, you know, for lack of a better term, chunky, like the Kingpin. And less like Luthor being a little bit, I shouldn't say thin, but thinner than this. But what do you think of the maitre d' that comes in to bring Luthor?
Oh, the manservant, and you realize that it's Captain Marvel.
Yeah, because he you can, like, there's a close-up on his face, and he says, absolutely, Mr. Luthor. And Norman says, who? And he points at him, and the Spectre says, the captain of the lightning and the thunder. Come, we have spent too much time wallowing in sin. And then, wow, this is a really crazy scene here. So we go to crazy, like, a nightclub here, and this is wild. This reminded me of when they would have a nightclub scene in the Batman animated series, but not the 90s one, the one where it was Bruce was old and the kid, Terry McGinnis.
Batman Beyond. That's a great show.
That's a really fun show. People don't talk about it very much. It's not as good as the 92 Batman.
I think it's my favorite
Batman,
of the Tim stuff. I think it's my favorite Tim stuff.
Yeah, I like it a lot more than most people do, I think, too. But there's people partying here and going crazy. And is that supposed to be the human bomb there?
Yeah, who is he bumping fists with?
I don't know, but all of a sudden I'm like, oh, man, is that the bomb? Is he like, hanging out this crazy
club?
Look
at the creeper, man. The creeper looks like an old wise. Teeth are missing. His hair is kind of funky.
Mm.
He's like the bar fly that, you know. I love this. There's a list. These entries on the wiki page are the list of characters is so long.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine.
They have a list for bar patrons.
That's great.
I can't figure out. Yeah, but there's some in here. Oh, Zan and Jaina. Zan and Jaina are in there somewhere.
The Wonder Twins. Oh, that's funny. Well, it's interesting because Norman and the Spectre are there, too. And Norman says, these kids, they're monsters, beasts. And the Spectre turns and looks and goes, they will be tamed. And all of a sudden, there's Superman. And he looks and he looks over at a guy and he says, this doesn't help. And he has his heat vision and he smashes a bunch of glasses on the bar and beers and everything. And he goes, party's over. And at first I'm thinking, OK, I don't think anybody's going to say or do anything here because, well, you know, it's Superman. So a guy says, ooh, I'm shaking. Ain't it past your bedtime, Grandpa? What does the S stand for? Senile.
That's Marvin.
Like, yeah, and I'm like, what? And he goes, what are you, whatever you're selling, I ain't. And you see, will you shut up? And there's Atom Smasher and just absolutely clobbers him.
Yeah, that's I like that it's Marvin, the first sidekick in Super Friends.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a very big depiction there, so it's not easy to tell who that is.
Well, I just because of the shirt. It's just that, remember, Marvin wore a shirt with a big M on it.
And a green M. Yep. Well, he just got clobbered, and Superman says, thank you. I'm here because the world's in bad shape. We have a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it in. I want you to join the league willingly. Before you do, you should know that we have rules. Heroes act in a certain way. This isn't it. Those of you who take up with us willingly will be expected to be responsible as you are powerful. You'd be expected to behave better. Those of you who don't will be dealt with. And he's got a really pissed off look on his face. And of course, everybody in there's like, uh-oh. And he goes, our job is thankless, but we do what has to be done. Right now, we're humanity's only hope. Be heroes. And a couple of the people kind of just look around at each other. And all of a sudden you hear, holy God, he was here. How'd he find? And he goes, one woman says to somebody else, are you in? And I'm like, oh, I think that's Big Barda there.
It is Big Barda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's Dick and Corey's daughter.
Yeah. And she says, I feel like I was just asked to become the 13th disciple. What do you think? And she says, I thought my dad was full of crap for being drafted by that guy. But now, and God, I'd follow that man to apocalypse. He's right, you know, the league knows the way. And then all of a sudden, thunk, a green arrow comes flying into the bar. And we see Ollie's there, and he says, so you heard Big Blue's pitch. Now for the Democratic response.
I love that line. I love. One reason I love Green Arrow so much is he's such an annoying lefty. You know, it's like, I wish I could be that obnoxious. And, you know, I do like that Green Arrow.
That was a great scene. And then, here's where we see there. I find this interesting, too. You know, it's almost like the satellite up in space, and it's a Green Lantern's thing that he has up there, right?
He's built them their watchtower.
Yeah, there's like a meeting room, and they're all around the table, and it looks fantastic. And
Captain Comet's at the table.
Yeah, it's a really great shot.
Daughter.
Mm-hmm. And then Norman thinks, will they have enough power to save it? And if so, from what? And again, we get another shot here of, you know, heroes just going berserk, and the Justice League inserting themselves to be like, you know, we're not going to have this. You know, we're going to stop this. This isn't going to be allowed to happen anymore. And it's really interesting here that, you know, Superman, he goes, after they clobbered a bunch of them, he goes, we shouldn't have to fight this hard. And Wonder Woman says, you said it yourself, Cal. We do what we have to do. And he goes, and yet we're ending up with more captives than converts. And this is really shocking to Superman that, you know, more people aren't just saying, yeah, let's do the right thing. That they're kind of, you know, still doing what they do or fighting them. I think this is really interesting. He goes, what do we do with those who refuse to see the light? And she goes, I have a suggestion. Follow me. And again, I totally forgot about this next part here. What did you think of this?
Oh, I love this. I love this. When they're being all the pain, I get what he's saying. It's because, you know, because this is more that Wonder Woman is pushing this narrative into his head.
Yeah.
I like these. I forget what these characters are. These are like they're neo-Nazi characters because they're somewhere in Germany from the looks. But it's just good. And I love this. I love Atlantis. I like his Arthur and Mira.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big guy laying on the ground is called Von Bock, and it says he's a Yugoslavian would-be dictator.
My God.
Fantastic. But yeah, Atlantis looks fantastic. And of course, you know, they say to, you know, Arthur here, Aquaman, like, hey, you know, you were getting the impression they kind of want his help, especially with the what they're going to do with the people who won't see the light. And I like how Arthur is just kind of like basically, you know, buzz off. I have to take care of the ocean, and that's 70% of the planet. You only have the other 30%. You can take care of that without my help.
I love it. I like he looks like King Arthur.
He does. Yeah.
He's got the seahorse on his tunic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looks really, really fantastic, the redesign here. And he goes, I have responsibilities you cannot even dream of. You, princess, surely understand how uneasy lies the head that wears a crown. And she says something interesting here. She says, I no longer have my royal station, Arthur. And he goes, no. She says, yes. Recently, my Amazon sisters decreed that I had failed in my mission as an ambassador, that I had not made the world a better place. They stripped me of my royalty and of my heritage. I am no longer welcome on Paradise Island. So we're kind of going to, you know, getting a peek into what's been going on with her. And it gives you a little more perspective on why she's as pissed off and the way she is right now. Right.
Oh yeah. And these are all kind of real things. Like, you know, Superman grieved. He ran away and created an artificial home to grieve for 10 years. And she's become everything she dislikes.
Yeah.
And Bruce is just a dick.
Yep. And he says he's not going to, you know, help them out. And she says, then resume your solitude, Arthur. Relish your world for so long as it lasts, which is interesting because right there is no threat to that right now.
I think it's a little bit of both. It's a warning that if we fail, what's going to happen and what may happen if I decide it happens.
Mm-hmm. And then the two of them, Superman and Wonder Woman, have a moment here where they just talk amongst each other. And he says, how long were you planning on keeping that from me? And she says, which, the prison or my loss? And he goes, both. Diana, you have changed, and that I don't like what you're asking me to do. I'm not used to forcing others to follow my lead. Now I'm supposed to jail those who won't, to act as judge, jury against our own kind. That's a fascistic line, Diana. And she says, and get ready to cross it. We are at war, Cal, and we will take prisoners. We will have to. They're not our kind. We're protectors of humanity. They're barely human. He says, is this you talking, Diana? I sense so much anger in you. And she says, not anger, passion. And she goes to kiss him. I was like, whoa, holy crap. And then Red Arrow and who else is that there that walks in?
Oh, that's that's Donna.
Donna Troy.
Yeah.
And they're like,
Mom and Dad are kissing.
Great. And then all of a sudden, one of them says, it's Magog Superman. We found him. And this is an interesting scenario here as well, which obviously, you know, you have two people here in Superman and Magog that there's a lot of problems and tension here, and they both have their own way of doing things. But I do find it interesting that, you know, Superman went away for a long time and Magog kind of assumed that station a little bit as, like, you know, the head guy, kind of the Superman of these newer heroes. And Superman was like, yeah, I'm not into, you know, how Magog runs things. But he kind of starts heading in the more of the Magog lane here as this story goes on. So I do find that interesting.
Yeah. Well, and then we get to when he calls Superman out. He doesn't have a single problem tips to calling Superman out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you got Superman gives him, I'm not afraid. Superman's like, I'm not afraid of you, Magog. Oh, get out of town. No, wait, you already did that. Actually, you got a lot of nerve blaming me. This was your fault. And then Superman goes, my fault. And then we get the flashback and we find out how, you know, the Joker killed everybody at the Daily Planet, including Lois.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And he says, it had to have been eating at you for a while before I even came into town. Hell, they were calling you old fashioned when I was a teenager. World's oldest Boy Scout, but you wouldn't change. You wouldn't get in step. You wouldn't flex with the times. Remember, the Daily Planet asked if that's why the Joker got so many notches on his belt when he blew into our town. How many did he take out just that time? 92 men and one woman. And again, we're thinking, oh, God, is it, the woman was Lois, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, hell, we both tore up the city looking for that that bastard. I really thought you or Batman would get to him first. Even I almost missed him. Almost. And it shows Magog killing the Joker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He goes, I will never forget the look on your face when you saw me standing over that smoking creep all the way to jail. So Superman basically, you know, tried to get Magog, you know, put in prison for murder, right?
Yeah. But the he's acquitted, and there's a poll on the newspaper cover. I love this. It says 77% pick Magog, 18% Superman, and then the rest is undecided.
Yeah, it's like a Pac-Man there. And this is when Superman decided to pack it in, because, you know, the people in Metropolis were basically saying, we don't have a problem with Magog killing the Joker. And, you know, you could have done that and you didn't. So, you know, we're changing with the times, if you want to put it in that frame of reference. And that was where Superman was like, well, I don't want to be in Metropolis. I don't want to be in this world anymore. I don't want to be a superhero anymore, if that's what you, you know, basically think superheroes are supposed to be all about. But, man, it really escalates between Magog and Superman here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's great. Magog zaps him. And it's just this great moment. And then on the other side, you see that it didn't do anything.
No.
Burned away his cape. Charred his, stained his uniform. I like the one of the people above is the Sandman, the Carter Hall son, Sandman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great. And you find out Magog's broken.
Yeah,
he's broken inside.
Yeah, he basically has like not a nervous breakdown, but like an emotional breakdown here. And he just is on his knees. And he basically begs Superman to kill him.
Yeah.
Because he's really, he was trying to put up a facade and act all tough. But when those people were all killed, when he went after Parasite, it really did mess him up so bad that, you know, he probably needs to be like in an institution and getting care, right?
Oh, yeah, because he's, when they find him, he's trying to rebuild like an old farm that is now, you know, radioactive wasteland.
Yeah. Yep. And I love it, too. He goes, a million ghosts punish me, lock me away, kill me, just make the ghosts go away. And that's where Superman just puts his head down and he says, we are at war. And Diana even looks a little surprised there, but
yeah, she's like, crap, what have I done?
Yeah. And I this next scene, I was not expecting this. So
I forgot about it too. Did you forget about it?
And I did. Yeah. I was like,
love this version of Orion. I'm
like, holy crap, he's going to Apocalypse.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He's basically, you know, they went to Atlantis and they got rebuffed, and now they are basically going to Apocalypse, or at least Superman is, basically to, you know, ask Orion's advice and help, and maybe even if they would house the, you know, the air quotes criminals that won't join up.
Oh, yeah.
And then Norman and the Spectre are there watching all this go down as well. And, you know, Orion's interesting. He's really not on step with Superman here, and Superman's kind of surprised by that. He thought they'd more see eye to eye here, but they really don't.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, Superman says, given the nature of my own struggle, I had hoped that Orion, the dog of war, could lend some wisdom, but I was mistaken. I can learn nothing from you. And Orion looks at him and says, that hardly matters. If this is about emancipating a world from fear's tyrannical shackles, it isn't my help you need. And that's he's making a pretty good point there, being that he's the son of, you know, Darkseid. So this is interesting, too. So, you know, hey, we go back to another place here, and Superman standing in front of, it almost looks like a giant mother box, right?
Yeah, it does. And I think that's what it's supposed to be, with an R2-D2 head on it.
Yeah, or something like from Doctor Who there.
Oh, yeah, it could be a Dalek.
Oh, man. And then there's a guy here, and I'm thinking to myself at first, who is this guy? And I thought,
that's Scott Free. That's Mr. Miracle. And that's Barda. I think the other Barda we saw is their kid.
Yeah, I think so, too. And they're, you know, because they're a little aged looking here. And he says, never enough to free your bodies. You must first unlock your minds. We will show you that a slaughterhouse is not a home when you reach out and touch freedom. You tower as tall as Orion. He fears you, for you can dream of things beyond him. And Superman says, I see. A lesson plan complete with visual aids. I always suspected you two would end up as teachers. And he goes, so much the better for what I have in mind, because I need a very special kind of help. And you and Barda are in. And then he sticks his hand inside this thing and it kind of opens up. And he goes, don't say in. It's too confining, which is hilarious. And she goes, you'll need a security force in the facility. I'll put together the best. And then the younger Barda, or whatever her name is, comes in and says, there you are, Superman. I came to retrieve you from Orion's lair, but you were gone. Hurry. I cannot keep the boom tube here much longer. And he says, Scott says, I see you've been recruiting. You were counting on us to work alongside, I guess her name is Avia?
Yeah.
And Superman says, I was told that your story has always been generational. Let's go. And no, we see the heroes then, they're all building something, and obviously it's pretty blatant that they're building a giant prison.
Yeah, from gulag. Like,
yeah, basically a gulag from tech from, whatchamacallit there, Apocalypse, right?
Yeah, and they're building it in Kansas.
Mm-hmm. And Superman's watching this, and then he says it's a stronghold of justice. And we see Norman, and he's saying to Spectre, it seems unwise to contain so much power and fury under one roof. And yet, what other choice does Superman have? And Spectre says, it is a question he will ask himself 100 times in the days to come. Meanwhile, an ungodly fellowship has begun to manifest, one that may change all that we know thus far. Observe, and that quick there, snap of a fingers, back in the boardroom here with, I can't remember what they called themselves, but, you know, Luthor and his band here, right?
Yes, they are. Wait a minute. There's a name in this wiki, and I was going to say it a little bit. What are they called? The Mankind Liberation Front.
The MLF, yeah, which is hilarious, by the way. They're riffing on Marvel there. Oh, that's fantastic. I love it. And then who walks in? But Batman, Ollie, Ted Kord, and Dinah.
Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, they're siding with the bad guys.
Yep, they're going to side with Luthor because they think, you know, Superman and the Justice League are going over a line and going too far. And, you know, he says, Batman says, given the circumstances, what choice do I have but to throw in with Lex Luthor? Alone, neither you nor I can expect victory, but together we can curtail the Justice League once and for all. And I like in that second panel down from the top there who you see standing in the background, which is really cool.
What, Captain Marvel?
Yep, he's standing there with his arms folded, and it's, you know, pretty obvious. We don't know why yet, but it's pretty obvious he's on the side of Luthor, and he's going to do what he tells him. So you can kind of vaguely see you've got Superman and the Justice League, Superman being the most powerful, and now you have Batman, Dinah, all those people, Luthor and his cronies, which, you know, it's arguable who's the most powerful because Luthor's pretty smart. You know, his smarts. Get it, kind of put him on a pretty high echelon, but as far as just raw power, we see is Captain Marvel. So that kind of, I feel like, you know, Ross and Wade tipped their hand a little bit here. Not much, but a tiny bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, great, great kind of cliffhanger here. Like, you're thinking to yourself, is Batman really going to do this? Like, what's he doing? He can't side with Luthor. He's got to have a better plan than that. That's what I'm thinking in my head. But then, again, this is an alternate universe, alternate world. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Great cliffhanger, though.
It is a great cliffhanger, and I forgot about how good these each one, they're pretty long comics, too. They're like a double page count, because what this thing is...
Yeah, 45 story pages, 52 pages overall, yeah.
Wow. See, when you give a comic writer enough space to work, what they can do...
Oh, it's,
you know,
fantastic.
I'm enjoying when I go back and read something written by like a Claremont or a Busick or a Wade, because it's like, thank you. Take time to tell me the story.
Yeah. Yep. You know? This was fantastic. It's like you got a great kind of intro issue. And now this one is digging a little bit deeper. And like, you know, it's only going to be four issues. We're halfway through already. And you don't even realize you're halfway through.
Oh,
like,
God. Reading it. And each issue gets bigger. Who are you doing three with?
Mart.
Okay.
Yeah, Mart and I are going to be doing issue three together, and then, you know, all four of us are going to get together to talk about the final issue and, you know, basically, you know, do a little recap with the first three issues, and then we're going to try to do issue four some justice here.
Oh, wow. That's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. You've actually got better books coming up on than I do.
Yeah, going to be a lot of fun. So, all right, well, thanks for joining me for this, man. This was a blast. I loved having you on here, man. It's always a good time, but... if anybody, you know, is looking for you and what you're up to, where can they find you?
They can find me. They can find my shows at Stop Let's Team Up. Just Google that, and it is on most podcasters and Libsyn feed, or Gallifrey's Most Wanted. It's my other podcast, which is also in the Libsyn feed. So I do three comic episodes a week most weeks, and Doctor Who every other week.
And by the time people hear this, they will have heard you and I talk some Defenders, which was a blast.
Yes. Much fun.
Gerber Defenders. We had a blast talking that. And then you just had a new episode come out, Legion, which
I finally did one. I hadn't done one in a month. I felt really bad because I've not.
Yeah,
done
you.
One in a month. I was like, because I'm not. Big read-throughs. I was, you know, I have high expectations for Legion. So, but I remember, when you do the read-throughs, there are eras where you go, okay, this is going to take a while.
But yeah, I was glad to hear it back because the Legion is a complete, you know, dark spot for me that I need to get into at some point. Yeah, hopefully the app will get some more things on.
I wish they would. It makes no sense. It really makes
huge, huge gaps in adventure comics.
Luckily, I have the archives. I mean, I'm just very lucky. Yeah. I just finished volume 8, so that's how many stories I've done.
And there's no way to. That's the only way you can get those, I think, isn't it? The archives.
There's some omnis. There's three omnis get you about through here, get you to about this point.
Okay.
There's three of them. There were some showcase that didn't get this far because they did 13 of these. It took me like years to find 13 because I didn't get it when it came out. It's a tiny print run and I got it for like $75. But then they've done four other hardbacks that are like Intro to the Darkness. You'd know it's, but they basically would be, they would be archives 14, 15, 16, and 17, and that goes right up to Great Darkness.
Oh, okay. I did
see. So basically, so to have this run, to have all that Legion, you have to have, you have to have any of the archives of that. That's really the only way to get them. It's a lot of volumes. It takes a show. It takes up a lot of space.
Yeah, I'm getting, but
you know, I got some. I got Jimbo kind of pushed to, you know, it's like you're, or Kirby. It was Kirby. Kirby was kind of, he commented on something about, you know, just muscle through because you're gonna get to the good stuff soon. And I'm like, and I wanted, I said, I really almost said, it's like, dude, it's like two more archives before I get to the good stuff. I think there's a couple George Tuska art in the next one. I'm just not a big fan of Win Mortimer, the guy's doing the art. But George Tuska does a bit of it.
Fantastic. So yeah, everybody, you know, find Ross, you're at JSA4E, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then
you can also find me on Mastodon, just Google Stop Let's Team Up, Instagram, and God, what's a new one? Thread.
Yeah, you even have, there's a Facebook page for your stuff. It's really, you've got
stuff. Yeah, I'm low maintenance on Facebook. I don't like being on Facebook normally. It's not my favorite social media site. I have some history with it. But I do have Instagram, so I just kind of tag it in there. I go in and check. I like things and share things, but I kind of sneak in. Oh, here's Billy's show. I'm going to share this. All right, I'm going to sneak back out of Facebook.
Yeah, I pretty much just like, share, and then post shows. That's about all I do.
I interact with like a very select few people.
Yeah.
But it's a good way to get in touch with me. It's how I met Jimbo. It's how I met you. It's how I met Martin. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can find fun people on the interwebs that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, that's going to get us out of here. And looking forward to the next episode where Mart and I are going to, you know, join up for issue 3. And then, like I said, all four of us are going to jump on for issue 4 for the finale. And that'll be a lot of fun.